This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Welcome to the Underground. Thanks for coming out. Another one of my biggest heroes in recovery, someone that I've watched in their journey towards healing, I'd like to have her come up and read a little bit of her story, tell you where she's coming from. So I'd like to have my wife come on up here. You guys give her a hand.
Well, I'm going to read because this is scary suddenly. But I don't know, I just can remember everything I want to say if I read, so hope you guys don't mind. But I'm just grateful to be here with you guys tonight, and who knew that we'd be doing this one day? Certainly not us. But we love helping people in recovery, and it's our desire to help as many as we can come from where we came from and encourage everyone else along the way as well. So I was raised in a very religious home, but also an extremely violent and abusive home. My dad was a very sick man in many, many ways, and he terrorized our home day and night all the years I was growing up. There are not words to describe the torture and abuse that my mother, my siblings, and I went through during those years. My dad made my two older brothers leave home when they were teenagers. My younger brother was in and out of foster homes because of the intensity of the abuse. And I grew up to be an angry and confused teenager myself, with no idea of how to relate to others or to a God who loved me. I was sexually abused by my grandfather for a period of about 15 years, starting when I was 7, and I never told anyone. As kids, we were told never to talk to anyone about anything that went on in our home, and so I grew up with everything bottled up inside. The abuse continued into adulthood because I was terrified of my grandfather and didn't have the strength inside to say no or to protect myself, or the courage to tell someone about it. I was married and had two children of my own before I was able to separate myself from him by moving to another state. I cannot tell you the depth of confusion and despair that gripped my life, as I knew nothing of how to have a healthy, normal relationship with other people or with God. I was completely unprepared for life out on my own, yet it was coming at me like a freight train. My parents moved to Texas with me and my two younger siblings when I was 15. My dad promised us a new life and said that things would be different for us there. And I remember being so full of hope. As it turned out, that wasn't true. With my two older brothers gone, I was the oldest child at home and was constantly in the middle of my parents' fights, trying to protect my mother. It was a living nightmare, and I was wide awake through every moment of it. One night, my dad beat me with a wooden chair, breaking two of my ribs. I ran out of my room onto an upstairs deck and jumped to the ground below to get away from him. A policeman found me sitting along the road in the dark, crying. He told me to get into the car, which I did. He took me out into a field close to my house and molested me, and then took me home and told me to get out of the car. He said he could do nothing about what was going on in our home. I wanted to die. I ran away the following year when I was 16 and caught a ride to Florida. From there, I went to Atlanta, Georgia, and became involved in prostitution, drugs, alcohol, and a life that was so lost and unbearable that parts of it have been completely blocked out of my memory. Since that time, I have been told of things that happened to me there that I have absolutely no memory of whatsoever. I am convinced that were it not for the constant care and mercy of God over me, that I would have been completely destroyed. There were countless times and situations in my life that I should never have survived or come out of alive. I was completely hopeless and saw no reason or way that my life would ever change. I felt like I was drowning and coming up for the last time. In 2005, as my second marriage was coming to a close, I knew that my life was completely out of control and that I was powerless to change it in any way. My lifestyle led me to such despair and self-hatred that it was all I could do to survive each day. I truly did not know where to turn to for help. At that point in my life, I didn't even know what recovery was or that it was ever possible for me. That is when God brought Stan Bourne into my life as a homeless drug addict. We became best friends, and there wasn't anything we didn't talk about and share with each other. The absolute mess that we both were in was obvious to us. And I told him that what I wanted more than anything was God. I told him that I was going to head toward God as best I knew how, and he assured me that God would certainly have nothing to do with him. I disagreed, and I said that I would not go without him. This would be a journey that we would go on together. As the year went by, we were inseparable and began to talk more and more about God and our desperate need of him, although we were still heavily involved with drugs and alcohol. God was calling us on a journey to freedom and complete healing that neither of us thought could ever be possible. Stan began to challenge me to make some changes in the way I was living, and although neither of us realized it, he was actually challenging me to a step three, to turn my will and life over to the care of God. I knew that my life was at a place that if something didn't happen soon, I would self-destruct. I was completely and totally ready to run to this God who loved me and give him my broken heart and life. I made some hard decisions about my lifestyle, and I didn't stop at anything. I took it so seriously. I stuck to my decisions. I sold my Harley. I changed my entire circle of friends. I quit going to any and all of my old hangouts. I quit coloring my hair. I gained some weight on purpose. I gave Stan my cell phone. I learned how to have boundaries in my life, which I desperately needed. And I learned how to have a no face, which is something that me and Stan came up with that helped me a lot. God knew I meant business, and he came running to me with so much love and so much grace, and he changed my entire world. Stan and I began to study recovery and identity and the way these things work together, and we began to apply these things that we were learning to our lives. We began studying how the wounds from our past affect the way that we see ourselves and others, and we begin to heal in miraculous ways. My life has radically changed from what it used to be, and there is not one thing I can think of that I need that I don't already have. The recovery of my life is nothing short of a miracle. On July 4, 2007, Stan and I were married. We have awesome communication and no secrets. We are in hot pursuit after God. He is our life. We stand in awe daily at what he can do with a couple of losers who make the decision to turn their will and lives over to his care. Our deepest desire is to reach out to those who are hurting and broken in the same ways we once were and help them receive hope, healing, restoration, and love. I used to wonder why God would let me go through so much pain and suffering, but now looking back, I'd do it all again to be able to be used in his kingdom and have compassion and understanding to those who are suffering in the ways that I have. I live to let the love of Jesus Christ flow through me like a river to my world. With every beat of my heart and until the angels close my eyes, I will love. Psalm 41:3 says, I waited patiently for the Lord to help me, and he turned to me and heard my cry. He has set my feet on solid ground and steadied me as I walked along. He has given me a new song to sing, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see what he has done and be amazed. They will put their trust in the Lord. And another verse that I love is 2 Corinthians 5:17. Old things have passed away, and all things have become new. It says that I am a new creation. It's wonderful, it's amazing, and it's a miracle. And I'm very thankful tonight to my Jesus.
You know, I talked this morning a little bit about being raised in the 70s and in the heavy needle use. You know, my sister's here, and she knows all about the nightmare of, you know, the hippie movement. The 70s music was cool, though. I was talking about that this morning, too. But being around, you know, all the drugs and the needles and all the sex, you know, our parents were involved in X-rated entertainment, and much of it was illegal. And just to kind of tie this together a little bit with what Glenna was talking about is my father ran a prostitution ring from our home. I don't remember how old my sister was, but she used to answer the phone for that call girl service in Atlanta, and she was just a young girl, and helped screen the calls looking for any vice cops. So the police were always a big deal. They were the big enemy to our family and our home, and drugs were a strong part of our culture in our family. I remember I was 10 years old, and I've told this before, so I'll just say really briefly, but you know, when I was 10, a 16-year-old call girl came into my dad's business. He had gotten her into the business, and I didn't know where she had come from. And most of the girls looked very different than this girl, and this girl was very young, very beautiful, and I just thought, you know, she was it. And I'm like, wow, this girl is awesome, you know, and she was stunning. And he had got her all doped up right away before she even got home from the airport. He had her on drugs, and you know, I could see what was going on with her, and he began getting her to work right away, laid it out to her, this is what you're going to do, this is how it works, and now get to work. And it was a horrible thing to witness as a 10-year-old. When she would come home at night, you know, I knew kind of what was going on, as a 10-year-old could understand, but I knew what was happening with her. And I didn't know that she knew exactly what was going on. I would sit with her at night. Most of the time she had nothing on, and she'd just be completely passed out. And I would just sit with her, and I would worry about her, and I would worry sick about this girl. What was going on in her mind? Where had she come from? What was her future? You know, all this. And after about 6 months, she ran off into the night, and I never saw her again, you know. And as I got older, yeah, I'd found out more about who she was, and I went on to live my life to end up walking into Fairbanks as a homeless drug addict. And my brother told me, when I was on a roof with him, he said, "Do you know that girl that lived with us in Atlanta? She lives in North Pole, you know." And I was like, "You got to be joking!" I was like, "You got to be joking!" You know, after all these years, and I was like, "I've got to see her." And so he arranged the meeting. And I went over her house, and we sat down, and we had the most incredible talk. And we have hardly spent a day apart since. My wife and I sharing our stories and what had happened to us. It has just been an absolute miracle what's gone on between us. And so I knew when I was 10 she was mine. I knew it. I knew it. Just kidding. So I will cut this session a bit short here, so I won't keep us, but we've been talking about biblical self-awareness, and self-awareness is such a big deal in recovery. Getting to the place where you kind of have that inner baby monitor on, you know, where you're able to listen, know, and it's a very different way of living, but no self-awareness series is complete without talking about emotions. So we're going to do a couple of sessions on this subject, and I know it's a real big subject, how we deal with our emotions, how to look at it. And at risk of oversimplifying a very complex subject, I'm going to break it down into two components, and that will be the mental component and the physical component. So I'm going to just draw this up on the board here. I'm going to draw this line here right down the middle. This would be my normal line. This isn't my heart monitor, thank God. But this is my normal line, how I kind of normal walk around every day living. And then we'll introduce a stress. We'll introduce it about right here. And so physically, I go into what is called right here the alarm stage. You know, and I'll put that here, alarm. Okay, so idea is I'm walking through the woods out here in Alaska, got my backpack on, and all of a sudden I see a bear stand up on its hind legs. I will go into the alarm stage, right? And so all of a sudden, and most of you know physically, you go through a lot of changes. Your pupils dilate, your palms get sweaty, your digestive system actually stops working and sends all the blood to my twiggy little legs for maximum twiggy power, right? And it sends the blood to my twiggy arms for maximum twiggy arm power. So you could just imagine what that's doing to my stomach, but at this moment, this is what I need, right? So I go into the alarm stage. As I turn and I begin running from this bear, then I go into a different stage physically, and this is what they call the resistance stage. I'm just going to write resist, okay? So I go into the resistance stage. Now I'm in resistance stage. I'm hoofing it from the bear, and I'm wishing I ate a bigger breakfast. I'm wishing that I had done more cardio work. But eventually, a system begins to fail, and you go into what is called the exhaustion stage. I'm going to just write that. And you don't just go back to normal. You go down below normal, and we're just going to put death right here down because now the bear is enjoying a twiggy snack. So this is kind of the picture physically of what you see a lot of. You know, I'm going to bring up a bunch of different things. And the idea here is obviously we're not going to just wrap up in a real clear one easy answer and everyone's emotionally healed. Yay, you know, we got it. This is a big subject and it's very personal. You know, how you heal. I was talking to a trauma counselor this week presenting some of these ideas. And what he was telling me was so cool because he was saying, you know, I have a way of healing trauma. I have a way of dealing with emotions, and you have a way, obviously, that's worked for you, and there are many different ways of doing this, and so you got to really work with, you know, what's going to work for you, you know, becoming a leading expert on you, and that's something that Glenn and I have had to do, is to become the world's leading expert on my recovery, on how it's going to work for me, and really not playing games, not making excuses, but I mean really getting good at how I'm going to operate at the highest level. Now, it's interesting that when we have a moment of fear like this, the moment this reaches the highest point, boom, right here at this high point, we have a way of taking a picture of this right here, snapshot, and containing this moment and being in this container, and then we'll store this for later. Like, we can do this. We do it. My wife hit a moose a few years ago, completely smashing the front end, the windshield of the car. I mean, it was just a horrific accident. And the next day, she got in the car to just do her normal driving, and she just broke down and wept, just pouring in tears. This here began to come to surface. You know, this trauma she had experienced was right here. And the idea of this is, if all of a sudden, like I worked in a bakery, and one of the guys I worked with got his hand caught in the bread thing, and it just ripped his finger off, like two of them, just clean, just bam. Like, and he turned to me, he just turned to me and looked, and I was like, whoa, you know? And the guy was actually kind of joking around with this for a little bit because of this. He couldn't even feel it. Like, he was like, wow. And the idea of the way our system's designed, it's a beautiful design. It's an amazing design. The way he operated was the idea is that he could go to the hospital, get surrounded by care, surrounded by love, stop, and then begin to deal with it. And then it starts bleeding really, really bad. And then he starts to feel it. And then the joking stops. And he begins to go through a healing process. That's the idea of the design. That's physically, that's emotionally as well. And another aspect of this that I just think is so interesting is that we don't really live in a day and a time where bears are standing up around every other corner. We don't really live in a day and a time when someone's going to kick the door down and drag my wife and kids off. But we'll begin developing this alarm reaction and these fears around things that aren't even life-threatening at all. And we'll have a very similar reaction to being in a crowded room, right? Shaking someone's hand, like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to shake their hand. Here it goes. You know, and I'm in clean, like, I'm in full alarm stage, right? I mean, do you know what I'm talking about? And I mean, I see this around people's cell phones now. Like, I'm very, very concerned about our culture and about young people and this phone thing, about what happens to them if I take their phone and there's a moment of boredom. You're going to see a full-on pupils dilate, right? Twiggy power come to life in front of us. Like, it's so intense. The news doesn't help. We go home. Not only do I have to deal with our problems and Fairbanks and the things that we have that weigh on our hearts and minds, but we got to see the whole world's chaos and problems. And I also believe, my wife and I firmly believe, that diet and lifestyle play a big part in this and our ability to deal with life, how we perceive and how we can, you know, clearly think and operate and give ourselves the ability to deal with things. I know when my diet and my lifestyle changed, my ability to deal and cope with things changed drastically, but it is a lot of work. And so one of the things that's so interesting is, remember, as long as I'm running from this bear, as long as I'm in this resistance stage, I'm full on sprinting. You know, this container's down here, you know, it's way back here. And I'm flying. I don't even have to deal with this. Remember, the guy's on route to the hospital with his fingers ripped off, you know, and he's still clowning around having fun. Look at my hand, you know. Tell me how many fingers I have up. You know, he was joking in crazy ways. As long as he's on route and he's running and he's in resistance stage, he doesn't really have to deal with it. And so what ends up happening is when I stop, guess what? Deal with me. I don't want it, so I got to run. I stop. I run. I stop. I run. Right? This is really what's going on. I don't know how many guys tell me, as long as I stay busy, as long as I work, as long as I'm moving. I'm like, what kind of life is that? Poor guy. You know, I mean, I get it. I get it, but I know what they're telling me. And it's not just one of these. Most people, especially people that have lived in active addiction, if you weren't traumatized to begin with, you know, getting involved in addiction and the things that you get involved in, the things you see, the things you do, you know, you will be traumatized shortly. And so most people that we rub shoulders with have a bunch of these floating around. And when they stop, you know, the nightmare begins. You know, and it's a very, very scary thing to stop. And one of the things I became afraid of when I began looking at this is if I get really good at coping with a life that I don't like, then I have gotten good at coping with a life I don't like. I don't want to cope with a life I don't like. How about we develop a life that we really like, and then I want to cope with it? You know, it's a very different thing. And I'm talking about my inner life. I'm not talking about being maximum comfortable like the American way, all the bells and whistles, you know, all the stuff. I got to be a little more comfortable. I'm talking about inner contentment and what that means to have an inscape that's magnificent, that's absolutely beautiful. And me and some guys were talking the other night about, you know, who's a more powerful warrior? You know, a guy that has to be on the run because he's so afraid of his inner life, has to stay busy. Let me hammer. Move. Let me saw. My containers are coming forward. Look out. Move. Is that a powerful warrior? Or is it the guy that can plop right down in the middle of anything and sit and be at peace? You know, right in the middle of warfare, spiritual warfare, physical warfare, and be at peace. He can see, he can hear, he's aware. Now that's power. To me, that's worth going after. That's really worth going after. And I noticed this when we started our recovery, and these are the things I asked Dave about. Poor guy, I asked him so many questions. I mean, I asked him so many questions about life. I remember asking him how often do you wash your bed sheets? You know, I asked him really personal questions, and I was really concerned. Like, really personal things, way more personal than that. And I'm just going, I really got to know this. I don't know how to do life. And he was right there loving me, answering my questions, all this stuff, buying me laundry detergent. No, not really. But one of the things that happened when we started our recovery is I'd sit in a waiting room, and I noticed all the people on their phones and all the stuff going on. And I just noticed within me, first of all, the miracle that I was living the kind of life, and some of you guys will understand what I mean, where I was in a waiting room for anything, you know, like, wow, I've joined the human race. I'm in a waiting room. I'm waiting to be served like every upstanding, you know, citizen. But anyway, I noticed when I was in a waiting room, all of a sudden, like, if someone come in and sit down, I just feel all uncomfortable. You know, I'm just like, ah. And I remember thinking, like, someone sat down. Like, what's the big deal, right? And I'm sitting here, and I'm like, I'm real uncomfortable. Like, and if they sat real close to me, I'm like, you know, I'm like, awkward, you know? And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And I've got all these things to deal with. All these things began to surface. And I remember thinking about looking at people thinking, you know, this is about like the young people where I can't have a moment of that feeling. You know, everybody whips their phone out, right, when they sit down. Huh. You know, I almost had a moment of between getting it out of the purse and turning it on, a moment where I had to feel uncomfortable. Like stuff started coming all over me. You know, containers just started floating left and right, you know, so they just start going after it. I'm really concerned about what that's creating in our belief systems, what we really believe is going to send us, you know, into an alarm stage. It's like, whoa. So I began really messing with that, you know, being in awkward situations. I have a friend of mine, the guy that mentored me in these sessions and taught me how to do these on the board and all these things, and he would tell me, he would sit in the most awkward and uncomfortable situations, and he would sit and believe the gospel. I mean, he would sit, and what's the gospel? The gospel is what God has done to make me secure as a person, like that I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm totally loved. I'm totally accepted. I'm forgiven. And I'm important because I'm his. And he would sit and rest. He would enter this Sabbath rest within. And I could look across a room at him and I'd know exactly what he was doing. He was believing the gospel. And he could just sit there. He could sit there all day. And I love it. And I began working with that and working with that in any time of awkwardness and feeling that way. And there was a time when this was without. You know, it was an actual bear. It was a real situation. It was really happening. And now where is it? You know, now it's in here. It's not really happening. It was, but now it's here. And I have to really be willing to look at that, because a person that carries a bunch of these, and I know a lot of you guys know what I mean, I'm looking at some seasoned people in recovery that have done this kind of work. Again, my wife and I were talking the other day about how cool it would be if things could just be what they really are. And that's it. Because I remember my substance abuse counselor telling me, well, just stay away from triggers. I'm like, what's a trigger? And she's like, anything that reminds you of drug use and gives you that craving. I'm like, I can't go in my kitchen. No, everything in there. Go in the bathroom. Oh, forget even going to the bathroom. Tape that off. Can't look at my wallet. Can't go in my bedroom. I'm thinking my glove box, my car. And I just remember being overwhelmed, like, my whole life is a trigger. I've done this my entire life, guys. And I remember, seeing all these triggers and all these things that would send me where I've got all these containers in me that are sending out holograms. And it's like, you know, that looks like the shape of a bear. I think that's a bear. That's a bear. you know, and it's sending out, I think that's that. I think that's that. That looks like this. I think that's this. That's definitely that. And it's like, boy, wouldn't it be amazing to be container free and people could just be people. Things could just be things. Like a round little piece of metal could just be a round little piece of metal. You know, like it's not a pipe. You know, everything's not something else. And I just really, really love this kind of work. And we really started going after this kind of work. And one of the things about it is learning how to be present. When we quit using, very, very clearly and right away, one of the things that you learn in recovery is that we have equated our coping mechanism, our drug of choice, whatever it is, with survival. We think we need it to survive. Our brain thinks we need it to survive. Like, I don't want it, I need it. And that's why addicts do such insane things, because what would you do to survive? So the idea is, if my brain can get me worked up to an alarm response, up to this point where now I think I'm going to die, if I can get myself worked up into a panic, then it gets to override all my common sense and I'll go use. It's chemically proven. It's a limbic response. People in recovery know this, that once I've worked myself up to now I'm in a 911, my brain shuts down all my logic and I'm going to relapse. I'm going to do it. And so the whole idea is staying present, staying very calm, staying at rest. In other words, believing the gospel, staying at rest. I mean, this is so profound. I've watched people that we've been working with work themselves up to a relapse. I've watched them do it. I remember this one girl, she's like, totally fine. You know, just fed, have a whole evening of comfort, all of it. And she starts going, you know, I think something might be wrong with me. You know, I think maybe I have a little chemical imbalance. I think, and we're watching her, and she's like, I think I have a chemical imbalance. I think something might be wrong with me. And then, see it? I think I might be crazy. I think I am crazy. Something's wrong with me. I got an imbalance. I need something. And I just watched her work herself all the way up to, and we're like going, whoa, 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 like, whoa, like, slow this thing down. And there's a part of our brain that's been wired to this coping mechanism that wants to relapse. Part of me wants to, really bad. And we'll do all these things, all this negotiating, all this chatter to get me to do it. And I remember calling up this guy when I was right on the edge of a relapse. And I'm like, okay, I'm on the edge. What do I got to do? And this is just one thing, okay? You guys can think this is silly, but this is just one thing. And he told me, I want you to get you a pair of boots out that you got, a pair of shoes, and I want you to pull the laces out. And I want you to sit there, put the shoe on the table, and I want you to lace those shoes. And I want you to enjoy every single moment. Every moment, I want you to just totally enjoy the design of that shoe and lace. And I want you to be 100% there. And I mean, I want you to just enjoy it like you got all the time in the world. Now, I was on the edge of relapse. And so I called him. I said, dude, I went from a 10 and I'm about down to maybe a 7 or a 6. He's like, cool, go make a pot of coffee, take your time, look at every granule, enjoy every moment, watch it brew. Like, pull a chair up, think about it, enjoy what's happening. Like, really, really enjoy this coffee. Like, you've got nothing in the world to do. And when that coffee comes out, I want you to pour a cup and I want you to feel its warmth. Enjoy that coffee with everything you are. Just, wow, I have this coffee. And I called him back. I'm like, dude, I made it. Like, I made it. There's a lot of power. And I say that at risk of, like, pushing techniques, because I know it's bigger than that. But what I'm saying is that the power of being present And being able to do this, it really, really helped me tremendously. Plus reaching out and calling them. This brings us to the mental component, which I'll just say really quick. The A is the event, right? Now with a bear, obviously, we can see the event, the triggering moment, right? All of a sudden, you're in a waiting room, and you feel real awkward. There's the triggering event. And then C is our response, and this is real basic right here to it. But we always forget about B is our beliefs right here. This is the key, what I'm believing about this. Like, you can't make me mad. I make me mad by what I think about what you're telling me, how you're talking to me. Like, if I said, I really hate your purple hair, you know, you wouldn't even be upset at all because you know you don't have purple hair. Right? But if I started saying things that started getting to you, and I start working my way at you, and I started getting to you here, then I could start getting, like, this response. And that's a really interesting thing, because at first I'm like, not only am I feeling bad, now you're telling me it's my fault, but it's also empowering, because it means that I have some ability here. I have a part in it. And my wife and I really believe with all our hearts, you know, saying all this, that it's a whole life kind of thing. This is a whole life kind of thing. This isn't a technique. This isn't like, when this happens, do this. This isn't three easy steps to recovery. You know, I do believe this is a whole life approach, because in this moment, in this time, you know, we believe that we're separate from love. We believe we're separate from what we need to be okay. Even in that waiting room, when I feel awkward, I'm feeling like I'm separated from love. I'm awkward. I feel like I don't have what I need in here. And this is a powerful thing to come up against. You look at King David and Goliath. You look at Daniel in the lion's den. You look at the apostles. You read their stories and the bravery and the magnificence of these people. And the things they were willing to do, because they had a deep awareness of the presence of God in here. That God's presence was in here all along. That, yes, I hit a moose and it was scary, but I lived. I could have died, but I didn't. I lived. Like, these bad things, just like Glenna, these things happened to me. My grandfather did this to me. It affected me deeply, but I survived. I lived. God is in the container with me. He is in this with me. And sometimes I tell you, when Glenna speaks to people and they say, "Who are you to talk to me?" She can say, "Hey, I've been there. I got it too. I know. It's powerful. Like, the power of me too. It's one of the coolest things ever." Let me read this thing to you, and then I'll close out for this time. And we'll do another session on emotions, doing some other work on it. We'll do a little different diagram next time. But let me just read this to you from Hebrews. It says, "Through acts of faith, they toppled kingdoms and made justice work. They took the promises for themselves. They were protected from lions and fires and sword thrusts, turned disadvantage to advantage. They won battles. They routed alien armies. Women received their loved ones back from the dead. And there were those who, under torture, refused to give in and go free, preferring something better, resurrection. Others braved abuse and whips and chains and dungeons. We have stories of those who were stoned and sawed in two, murdered in cold blood. Stories of vagrants wandering the earth in animal skins, homeless, friendless, powerless. This is how God sees them. Check it out. The world didn't deserve them. Making their way as best they could on the cruel edges of the world. Not one of these people, even though their lives of faith were exemplary, got their hands on what was promised. God had a better plan for us, that their faith and our faith could come together to make one completed whole, their lives of faith not complete apart from ours. And here's our orders. Do you see what all this means? All these pioneers who blazed the way, all these veterans cheering us on. It means we better get on with it. Start running, never quit, no extra spiritual fat, no parasitic sins. Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race. Study how he did it, because he never lost sight of where he was headed. And that exhilarating finish in and with God, he could put up with anything along the way, the cross, shame, whatever. And now he's there in a place of honor, right alongside God. You know, it's hard to stop reading, to be honest with you. So God promises me that he has waiting for me on the other side a brand new body, a brand new twiggy body waiting for me. And he has waiting for me on the other side a place to live prepared for me, a place for you, prepared for you, better than Fairbanks. Check that out. So why would he leave us here? Why would he leave me here? He's got a body that's awesome and ready to go for me, prepared for me. And he's got a mansion prepared for me, ready and waiting. Why leave me here? Well, he's got things for me to do. He's not done. I'm not done. You're not done. And I'm so excited about it. So in other words, we really can't lose in loving one another. Learning how to love one another is our highest call. And so I believe that this is a very intentional thing to be after. This is something to really look at and to see the things that cause us to go into these alarm stages and the resistance stage. Many of us live a life in the resistance stage, and we can't sustain life the way we're living. Something has to give here. And we work really, really hard. It's very intentional from the moment we wake up and way into when we lay down to go to sleep. We are after it. I'm constantly downloading these God downloads, these Son of God downloads into my life, into my heart. And I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it. And so it's just a marvelous thing. One last story and then I'll quit and I'll pray. Glenn and I found ourselves once in a situation where I normally would just give in and use. Right in the beginning of our recovery, and we just got in touch with Journey and been involved. And all of a sudden, I'm in a situation where, like, I can't tell you what it was because it's really awkward, but where the wife and the husband and this whole thing were, I'm getting ready to relapse hard. And I didn't know what to do. Like, the way I saw myself was giving in. And I thought, you know, Glenna needed me to make the right call here. Like, Journey needed me to make the right call. It's just beginning, you know? And I thought, who do I know that would know what to do? And I got this picture of Pastor Derek. And I just got this picture. It's so funny because he came into my mind. I think it was God. And it was like, what would he do right now? Like, right now, if we switched places, and he was standing where I am in this situation, it was crystal clear what he would do. And I just did it. I became Pastor Derek. I really did. No, guys, I really did. Not physically. I actually became him, and I did what I knew he would do boldly. He's bold. You know, he says it, he does it, he moves in it, he just goes for it. And you can ask my wife, I just changed. And I went through these motions, and I found a way to be where there was no way before. And that became mine at that moment. I became that, and it worked. It was so powerful. And so, like, he doesn't even know the example, how we watch, we're paying attention, and we're absorbing those abilities from each other. And I'm just so thankful for my Christian family, for Dave and everyone here, where we're standing in this place, in this grand opening, doing this, doing what we're doing, from what we've come from. It's just a miracle, and I'm really thankful. So anyway, next week we'll head right back into this. I'll have a different diagram. We'll do at least one more session on emotions and try to work on some more of this trauma stuff. I find this very fascinating, and I hope this was helpful tonight to people. We'll give you a different twist on it. And so we'll just keep right on going with the self-awareness series. I'll go ahead and pray. Father, thank you for the gospel. Thank you for what you've done for us. As the sons and daughters of God, I pray that we would just know your love. We would just know your love. And we would go to sleep tonight, and the last thing that we would think on, the last thing that we would be chewing on in our minds is thank you for your love. I am loved. Thank you, God. I just want to thank you, God. Thank you that we are loved. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you, guys.